Hi, everyone. Welcome to another Campfire Conversation. And hosting tonight, besides Sam and myself, is David Geyer. And as you probably read in the email, David is going to be talking with Jason, a friend of all of ours. But David's been walking carefully with Jason through the last year, or a couple years, really. And David had emailed me or left me a voicemail and said, "You've just got to hear Jason's story. It's remarkable how God has been with him and the things he's done with him in a very hard season in his life." So that sold it for me. And Jason and I haven't talked for so long. I'm excited to hear what's been happening in his life, getting caught up, let alone hear these stories. So, Jason, thank you for joining us. David, thank you for doing this. And I'm just going to pass it to you right now, David.
All right, great. And Jason, you still with us?
You bet. You bet. I'm right here.
You didn't hightail out of there after that? Okay.
I thought about it. That is quite a setup there, but I've got to produce now.
He did yoga for an hour before he joined us, he told me. So he's in the zone, so that's good. So, you know, so my intention in my head, whether it happens or not, I'm hoping, is to just – you know, we have some great conversations like, you know, all of us do. And I thought, gosh, I wish we could just have one of our good conversations and just bring it to base camp while we're doing it. And so that's what I'm hoping to do. And I think I can say fairly, I mean, yeah, we're going to hear Jason's story, but it's just being dropped into a story and where he is currently. Right. And, you know, Gary, I think I put on the voicemail, you know, he's been to hell and back, and you kind of use that as a title. What did you say, Jason? Like, well, wait a minute. Who says I'm back?
Take the back out, and then I'll be happy to join you. But, yeah.
Well, yeah, for some context, Jason, maybe, and again, I'm going to talk a lot, so cut out a little bit. Jason and I have known each other for, well, quite a few years now. And what's fun is that, Gary, you and I did a podcast, you know, sitting in your basement and a recording, and Jason heard it somewhere and then called me, and it led to, you know, doing a coaching weekend with him. And then we became really good friends. And he's been he's been a huge part of my time out here out west. So Jason and I, we've been friends maybe 8 years. That sound about right?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, somewhere in there, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, David's become one of my best friends.
There's a lot of people that can say that, I think.
Yeah, yep. So, Dave, how much of my – I don't quite know where to drop in.
Yeah.
David, where did you want me to try to give some context?
Well, let me throw something back to you, Jason, if it's okay. I mean – so we all have places that we just didn't get to live. Sometimes we don't even know that, right? It's just what your normal was. And in my own story, there's just things I missed, things I wasn't able to do, wasn't invited into, that sort of thing. And I had no idea what was coming when I met Jason. And so he's been a huge gift. So this isn't, you know, he was a client or whatever. He just became a brother. And very quickly, he has had me up to Wyoming, I don't know, dozens of times, I think. And we have, we've been, you know, we've built a steel barn. We broke up concrete. I ran a jackhammer. If you guys know me, this is not typically Dave Geyer. He's taught me how to run a bobcat, take me out on four-wheelers, looking at the sunset over the open space, just the big wide open prairies. And he's just a man that invited me into a really large life. And he literally would say, "Geyer, you need to get out of your office and come and do real work."
That's what we've been telling you for a long time, to find some real work.
Yeah, thanks, Gary. Appreciate it.
But back to Jason.
So, Jason, you heard a podcast with Gary and David, and you decided to call David. What initiated all that?
So, you know, this whole movement towards the heart and moving towards God, this whole, I don't know what to call it, heart movement.
Sure.
This sort of, you know, many of us have found life in over the last 10, 15 years in pursuing God. I was searching through some Ransomed Heart stuff. I was really intrigued with Gary's calling stuff when Gary was still with Ransomed Heart. So somehow that led me to the Noble Heart, I think, you know, just playing around, searching for stuff online. And I found Gary's website. And I listened to some of the podcasts, and I don't know what stood out above other podcasts with Geyer. I'm sorry, I call him Geyer. I'll call him David if it sounds better on the tape. But
Geyer works great. Geyer,
and they're Geyer. Actually using tape, Jason, just so you know. They're that low tech. So.
But David went into a story about how God spoke to him. And I forget where that was, if it was at a boot camp or if it was a different event, but a similar type of event. And he just recounted the story, and it struck me. And then I think at the end of the podcast, there was a little blip about what David does. He, you know, he does Life Quest, helping guys go into their story and gals. And literally, I thought, well, Gary Barkalow is probably too famous for me to get a hold of him, so I'm going to call this other guy, David Geyer, and see if he'll answer my email or phone call. Literally, what went through my head. And you know, turns out to be that, you know, I'm friends with Gary now. I don't know Gary near as well as I know David, but you know, David has become one of my best friends. We talk probably almost every day about really deep stuff. And so that all sprung from a conversation between Gary and David on one of these talks. It's amazing the impact these things can have.
Yeah, that's really good. Yep, it is true. Yep. And I, you know, I gave the nod to just the kind of life Jason's led because it's big and it brought life to me. And so in the last couple of years or so, to watch Jason go through loss, to experience loss, that, I mean, I think everyone would agree was just profound. You know, that's been everything. It's been hard. It's been really good in a hard way. And he looks for God, even if it's desperately looking for God. And
so Jason, why don't you describe what David's talking about, the loss, this profound loss that you've experienced in the recent past. So yeah, let's start there because that will give us context.
Yeah. So you know, the overshot is I'm going through a divorce. It's pretty much over. I mean, the papers have not been done by the judge, but they're on the way to the judge. So I've lost my marriage, and I almost lost my relationship with my daughter. I've been able to retain that to a certain extent. I've moved to the Midwest to do that, but it's big, right? So I'm trying to give this some context. So I struggled with some level of mental illness. I'm a very high-functioning person, a high-functioning bipolar type person. And so that is to say there's people in our society like me that struggle with mental illness that doesn't necessarily look like mental illness to what everyone would think that is. And so it's a tough place to be. You can function. You can do a lot in this world. And then you can also hurt people too because you can do so much. And so I hurt my wife deeply. I was emotionally absent from her. I was lost in depression, and at times in mania, and at times in the manic depressive mode. Unaware of that, I knew something wasn't right, but I was detached from her. And so my wonderful wife was by herself on the prairies of Wyoming. We lived outside of Laramie, Wyoming. Wonderful, beautiful place, but very harsh environment. And she was a great woman, a great wife, and still is today. I love her to this day. I probably will never remarry. So that's a little context. We lived outside of Laramie. I had a construction business. And it's a harsh environment all the way around. It's kind of why people live in Wyoming, because they like that environment. But it does wear on a person, and it wore her down, and eventually she had to leave. I got so far into my illness, I became verbally abusive. And to describe what verbally abusive is, that means you swear and yell. I was emotionally abusive. I was just detached. And so she left. And for a time, we thought maybe we'd get back together. She moved to Fort Collins. We spent a year liquidating everything, selling our house and my business. And I was on my way to Fort Collins to live in Fort Collins. And somewhere in her processing, she had decided she couldn't go forward anymore with trying to get back together. So she moved to Chicago, where her folks are from, where she grew up, and she took our daughter. And so I went through varying.
Sam, let me just interrupt you a minute, Jason.
You bet, yeah.
You are being incredibly gracious. I've talked to a lot of people going through divorces, and you're saying she's lovely, she's wonderful, I love her, but I don't feel any bitterness from you. I mean, I feel sorrow and I feel grief. Don't get me wrong. I'm just amazed. Have you been that way this whole time? Or maybe that's part of your story, but I'm just very impressed with the tone of your voice, with your demeanor, with your words. Anyway, just an observation.
Yeah, you bet. And this is funny. Who knows where this conversation will go? But yeah. It's real. I'm not trying to put that out there to sound like a Superman. She's an amazing woman. And I was ill, and I was emotionally detached, and I was verbally abusive. And I probably said that enough, but it's true. And I think if we're going to take this into the mystery of God, what David has been, I think, driving at is, this has been an obliterating process. It's difficult to say it it's difficult to express it in a short time like this, but to methodically go through the process of watching your wife leave and thinking, well, maybe she'll stay, maybe I can get well. I poured myself into wellness. I spent thousands on all kinds of help, which really helped. A person like me can really get a hold of the ailments and be productive in society. I think what is fascinating is to go through an obliterating process where you literally are stripped of anything that means anything to you, and to be a believer and to be processing that with God. I have seen God be God in ways that I didn't expect him to be. And I think that's what's so fascinating. I'm not sure we can drill into that in this time, but let's try. I think that's what David's driving at. So what does that start up for the questions?
Yeah, I don't have words to describe it. I just say, I mean, imagine whoever's listening to this, you know, I love this man, and I just watched him lose everything.
Yeah.
That's hard.
And that process is difficult to express here. But that is the process. If you could imagine in your life, everything that ever meant anything to you is taken. And then layer in the fact that it was your own brokenness that brought it on. And then layer in that we are pursuing a God who says he loves us, who says he leads us, who says he cares for us, all of which theologically I believe. But to have things taken from you, you know, it makes me think of those in Syria. I certainly wouldn't compare my story to Syria, but it helps me think of how does a Christian in Syria who possibly watches their daughter be pulled out of the house and be raped or killed, how do you process that with God? And if that helps give some context to the conversation, I felt somewhat like that I've tried to walk with God and yet my own brokenness still brought utter devastation to my life. And so the story now that I'm living out is this process of trying to move forward, trying to have forward progress instead of staying put. And so, yeah, that's a little context of where I'm going. Does that, sort of fall flat, or does that help us go somewhere?
Well, for me, I mean, when we had conversations, I mean, I talk all the time, and when we had conversations, like, they mattered. Like, life really, like, you're pulled into the moment. And where, you know, it's a strange gift in a sense, because there's so much suffering, but you're pulled into the moment. And you're present, because everything matters a lot.
David, explain that to me. Help me understand what you mean by being pulled into the moment.
Well, first, I mean, I'm out of advice most times with Jason, and I know not to give advice, but you know, I do. We you know, a lot of times you're talking and you're thinking, and how about this and how about that, and did you try this? And when to watch a person just have no control, trying to in good ways. I mean, just what Jason did to, you know, become healthy, find help, the money. I mean, he didn't mention that, you know, it was a couple hundred, I don't know, 150-mile drive each way or something. I don't know. Just to get to, you know, some of the help that he was going through, he tried to stay at my house. That you stay in the moment when you have nothing else to say. You just, it allows you to be present. Mm-hmm.
I have wondered in that, if that is what God is after. I'm not sure why he takes some people to certain places and others not. But in my search for sanity in this, in my search for God in this, I think it may be a stripping process, a place where I can't come to you guys tonight. I can't come to a church and sort of bring a Christian flavor to things. I certainly am theologically a Christian man, but any sense of the way we do Christianity in the Western world has been pretty much stripped from me. I have literally had to daily seek for divine help to move. And so the grace in that, I think, this is still a process, you know, I am in process. I think the grace and probably the relief of when I get to leave this world will be the realization in which I'm trying to embrace, the realization that literally God, the Trinity, is stripping me of all that I could cling to here. And allowing me the privilege of having to depend on him at a level that I never would have had to. I mean, I can pretty much do anything I want to do. I've been able to do what I put my hands to, but I can't do that anymore. It's all gone. It's all gone. And I am living a life now where I see God show up in the most strange, playful, off-the-wall ways that no one would know the meaning of the incidents except for God. There is impossible things that go on in my life. And I think some of those are what stirred up David to want to talk. But,
let me jump in and define when you say, you know, I'm a Christian man and you are, but I can't relate in a sense to what I grew up with in the West. And it makes sense to do the right things. Of course, it makes sense to pray things. But when a man does everything he can and prays every way he can, and it doesn't go right, you know, you just have a reality check. And then the beautiful side on the other side of that is that, and then God says, yep, and I will show up. You'll experience me in the way I want you to. You don't have to do something to get it to happen.
You want to hear a funny thing that God said to me? One of the things, I could tell you a list of things. Literally, God said to me one day, out of the blue. I don't know how you guys hear from God, but I have these occurrences where there's no other explanation. And God said, Jason, you're afraid. If you don't pray, I won't do anything. And this was in the process of the stripping, of losing my life in Wyoming, where I had lived for 25 years, or as a part of this great community, where I had access to mountains and ranches and everything a man would ever want to do. I had a beautiful life in Wyoming. As I watched this be stripped away, then my wife leaves, and then she tells me, oh, I'm taking our daughter to Chicago, 1,000 miles away. As this stuff is being stripped, God is saying funny things to me, like, Jason, you are afraid. If you don't pray, I won't do anything. What does a Christian man do with that? You're taught, pray, like David just said. Seek God, you know, co-labor with God towards the good. Let's move towards where God is working. What do you do when this mysterious God says to you, he sort of flips it on his head, flips it on his head and says, Jason, you are afraid. If you don't pray, I won't do anything. That's a little glimpse into some of how God has been interacting with me, flipping things.
So what was your
over.
Answer when you heard God say that? What was your response?
It was probably what it sounds like to you guys. I mean, you know, you think, well, that's so counterintuitive. God, I'm a Christian. I'm asking you to act. I'm trying to, you know, pray according to your will, and it will be done. You know, all of the list of Christian things we would say. And then this mysterious God, almost joking with me, in the midst of utter obliteration, you know, would have the audacity to say that to a man that's suffering. It gives me insight into God's personality, that this suffering that we experience here absolutely has to be an invitation into abandonment. And if I don't approach my suffering with abandonment, I won't make it. And so the suffering that I'm going through is an invitation. And it helps me even to explain this here, because it gives me hope to move forward, that I will embrace it, you know. And for a man, let's keep it in the first person, for a man to come to terms with the fact that you could be suffering and God would almost toy with you. And those aren't the correct words, forgive me for not having the exact words, but God would come into a man and say things that are so almost playful, or as if, Jason, you can't quite see the other end of this. When this thing unfolds, it will be such a revelation. It will be such a release. You know, that. And when I say that, I'm speaking of the long term, when we finally leave this dimension and go to be with God in his dimension, that will be a release. So my point being, guys, sorry to keep this on track, is God has almost played with me with his words and his intention towards me in suffering. What does a man do with that? I think that's the core. Are you going to end your life because it's just too much? Or are you going to embrace these mysterious things that come from God and invite me in? I mean, I would have to be intellectually dishonest to say that God has not pursued me playfully while I am utterly suffering. I mean, suffering at the deepest level I could think of.
Yeah, and in the to put a chapter in his story, Jason was lost into, you know, how do I get back to where I can be with my daughter, right? You tried a job that lasted like all of 3 days. It was horrible. You went back to your home state. You know, it was helpful with family, but still really dark. And then you were offered a job, but they needed you to be fluent in Spanish. And then you get this fun, crazy, risky idea of, why don't I move to Ecuador? Why don't you take us there a year and a half ago or a year ago? Whatever.
Yeah, so you bet. So envision, if you can, guys, the life in Wyoming ends. A little bit of hope that we're going to get together in Colorado and live, that goes away, so that the deepening of the suffering deepens. I had some job offers in Colorado. I was going to work in Fort Collins, and I was going to work for the Forest Service. That all went away when she decided to divorce and take my daughter to Chicago. So, like David said, I was pursuing, what do you do? I mean, it's just, my life is gone. My life of 25 years is gone. It's just obliterated. What does a man do? I mean, you almost feel like you're in space floating. So I knew the marriage was done. I thought, well, my daughter needs her dad. I'm going to move to near Wisconsin, near Chicago. So came here, didn't work. That's where Ecuador comes in, is searching for a career type job. I was a contractor for 15 years. I have a master's degree. You know, I've been well educated, but I had run a construction business for 15 years. It wasn't something to easily transition out of. Family in Ecuador, I was offered a job if I could improve my Spanish. And so I had an opportunity to go live in Ecuador for basically free. And this was quite literally a rescue, because at this point, if you can balance the obliteration that a man is feeling at this point, the utter nothingness of trying to create a life again, this was literally, I had this vision of God taking a very bloody, mortally wounded, bleeding man and putting him on a stretcher and saving him. And because I was at the end, I was to the point of writing letters to people. I knew where I was going to end things. I had the means, and that's where I was. But God literally put this dying, bloody man on a stretcher and to bring it back to this world, you know, he took me to Ecuador, where I spent about 7-8 months in a Spanish language school, improving my Spanish to the level I could do my job that I have now. But the larger story is, God took me from this death, this place of death. Literally, I would say I was weeks away from not being with us. He put me in this mountain environment, and if you guys knew me, mountains are me. It just fits the geography of my soul, you know, to put it in terms that I heard one man say. Ecuador is a mountainous country. I got to live in a free apartment. I went to Spanish classes every day and climbed mountains on the weekends, and it was this slow recovery of stepping back from death. It wasn't like this marvelous, all of a sudden I'm going to have victory and run around and rah-rah, but it was a deliberate and precise and personal recovery room for me to simply get me back on my feet. I've got more I could say about that, guys, but do you want to interject there?
Well, I'll say that, I mean, we talked a number of times, I mean, a lot, because you were in darkness and you weren't feeling anything. So, I mean, that's my experience, you know. Yeah, I mean, that's by the phone. You were now, you know, a couple thousand miles from me, but you weren't feeling anything. And, you know, because I'm sitting outside of it, there's this, wow, Ecuador, you know, like, I'm kind of geeked out about it. And you want to be geeked out about it, but you would be honest and say, but I don't feel anything. Uh-huh. And to, you know, as a man who loves you, to go, wow, he's going to get on a plane, right? In that state, in that emotional state, and fly across the world. And I found an email, Jason. This was, you said this in an email a couple months into it. My days here. Well, Ecuador is somewhat of a place of a spiritual birth and formation for me. I just remember reading those words like, yeah, you know, you said it again later in the same email, that you were being reborn, a spiritual rebirth. And he said, I can't tell you how much I have missed God. There's something about clouds and thunder, the 10,000 feet in the Indian mountains. It was a simple but entirely sincere faith of an Indian from a Stone Age tribe that doesn't kill his neighbors anymore because now he knows Christ. And it was just, you told me on a phone one time, you said, God is romancing me in ways I never thought were possible.
Yeah. Yeah, the Ecuador, I'll try to give a little context that you guys probably know, the Jim Elliott and Nate Saint story and the three other men. It all went down in Ecuador. Those men were key in my Christian development, you know, years ago. There are stories upon stories of personal things where God met me. I went down to Shell Meta is the town where Nate Saint had his, basically that's where the airport was. It's now a pretty developed airport, but I had been there 20 years ago on sort of a pilgrimage to see where those men died. God took me back there. And, the thing about that story I've loved is, you know, people talk about that Ecuador story as though these men were these ultra devoted, hardcore, theological, correct people, and you need to be obedient and go and die for God. That was a romance. I mean, those men died in Ecuador because they were in a romance with this mysterious God that we are pursuing. And in my story, God takes me to these places. He took me to Ecuador. I sat in the airport, hoping to get a ride out into the jungle to see some of these folks out in the jungle, to meet some of these people that actually had killed these missionaries. The stories of what God did for me. I went into that airport and sat, said, is there a plane going out today? Can I go out somewhere? And this is so odd. I mean, people don't do that. You know, it's just kind of how I am. I'm okay being socially awkward. And they said, yeah, no, there's no room on the planes. You can't do that. You know, it costs you $500 or you can't do that sort of thing. What are you talking about? And so I would just sit. And then I met a missionary. I met a missionary that came in and he had been a missionary there for 50 years in the jungle. And he said, we're going out today to take some stuff out to this tribe. And I don't know if you get on a plane or not. And I just sat and talked to him. And almost as if you could cue it, as almost as if it was a movie, the guy behind the counter came over and said, yeah, there's room on that plane. You can go. And guys, that just doesn't happen. And as I flow through these times with God, I think it's almost as if I just expect him now. I do expect him to show up in these playful ways. And so I'm sorry I can't describe this perfectly. You can't see what's in my head. But then minutes later, I'm on a plane flying over the Amazon jungle, going out to a tribe out in the jungle that basically lives on coconuts and whatever they can hunt. And this stuff just happens to me. There's no one on this planet that could generate that. I mean, that is a divine thing. I went into the Nate Saint house there and was praying. There's a house there that's a sort of a where all of us can go that are fascinated with that story. You know, if you're sort of doing Christian tourism, you could go down there and go in this house where the women were when they heard the story from the men being killed in the jungle, where they actually sat. It's a sacred, sacred place for me. And I was in the house praying. I forget even what I was talking about, just sort of in that state of trying to connect with God and be aware. And I said, God, you know, I'm almost depressed that I can't give my life like these men did. I want to be a part of something. I want to be a part of something like that. And I want to be a part of a story, I think is what I said. And God said to me, Jason, the story continues. Inasmuch that I can enter into, you know, the same type of giving myself over as those men that did in Ecuador, I can enter into that today. I can give myself over the same way those men did, as they were speared to death. And so, yeah, questions, does that take us anywhere? That's simply a story. I'm not here to talk about Ecuador, but that's part of a rescue of why I'm here and able to speak today.
Well, I'm on this side of the planet, and I get an email. It says, Geyer, would you please frickin' get WhatsApp like the rest of the world has? Because I got to talk to you. So I'm like, oh, yeah. There's a heartbeat. I just think I heard a pulse.
Yeah.
And then one of the times I finally get my WhatsApp app on my phone. He's like, well, I climbed a 20,000-foot summit yesterday, you know, after busing 8 hours. And I mean, these, you know, I'm just trying to give you guys a glimpse. So, you know, I'm sitting in Fort Collins. I'm teaching some boring online class on my computer, sitting in my little tiny cubbyhole. And, you know, I'm getting, like, messages from another world, you know, at 20,000 feet because he clicks a picture and sends it to me. And
yeah,
so his life just started to just really intrigue me, stirring me up, you know. And then, Jason, I just got to throw this here because it's funny, but I think God was in it. So I have this dream. I'll read the email. It's brief. I said, had a dream, talking to Jason, had a dream and you were in it momentarily. Sounds a bit strange, but you were going to be given a horse that had never been ridden before. And you were really excited and said boldly, great, I'm going to ride it naked. You then went up front on what was sort of like an outdoor stage to accept the horse, and you wanted it pure and primal, just you and the animal. And for me, this all symbolized the excitement and the pure adventure and the freedom that you wanted. So I don't even usually remember my dreams, right? We usually don't. I just wake up. I've got this like story in my head that I had just dreamt. And I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there, guys. It's just data. I've got not ever dreamt a guy, you know, riding a horse naked. That's probably a good thing. Yeah. but yeah, there was just this sense to like it's pure, it's raw in a good way. And what I remembered was like just pure like excitement from Jason, like no one would have been able to hold him back from getting on that horse. And that happened, I don't know what, halfway through Ecuador, I think.
So, Jason, what did you do with that story that David communicated to you through that email? I mean, how did that hit you, or how did you interpret it over time?
Yeah, I'm a closet charismatic. So when I hear stuff like that, I think, I'll bet God spoke to him. I'll bet that's the real deal. And, you know, but then I'm very contemplative. And so I would think about that for months. And I'm glad he brought that up again. I think that represents, ever since I became a believer, when I came to believe that Jesus was who he said he is, it was so profound to me. I just thought, well, this is everything. It's not, you know, we live in a world as though there are other things going on. And, you know, well, I'm going to kind of dabble in, maybe there's some Buddhism going on, or maybe the Hindus have something going on, or maybe there is this other sort of reality. But the reality of Christ is there's light and then there is nothing else. It's not as though there are these other gods or other places to go that are sort of floating around if you don't come to know Jesus. There's nothing. And that's the funny thing in the time in which we live. We have so many things thrown at us and so many options. And we think, well, I'm sort of part of this. I'm sort of part of that. But the fascination I have with the Trinity is that that's all there is. There is God, and then there is nothing. And anywhere we have light in this world, anywhere we have peace, anywhere we have any sense of wellness, those are like raised from God. People don't realize it. They think it's something else. But in the end, that will be obvious. And so that's my fascination with Jesus, is there is nothing else. And so the representation of him talking about me getting on a horse naked is that's how I feel about God, is I'm a broken man. I have trouble pursuing God. I go to idols. I'm distracted. I get bored. I'm demanding. I mean, I have everything everyone else has. But there is an essence in me that just thinks, you know, there's nothing else. What on earth would I want to give my life to other than the reality of who this mysterious God is? And then for me to go through suffering that I can't even put into words, and then to have him speak to me in a playful, almost toying with me way while I'm in the midst of my deepest suffering, reveals to me a God that is not afraid of the suffering that's going on the planet. And the only thing that I can decipher as I go through this process is, again, that our suffering is an opportunity for us to abandon ourselves deeper. I'll use the modern day yoga analogy, because yoga is so popular, and I don't know if any of you guys are into it. You can make fun of me if you want to, but I love yoga. But there is a process, and part of why I love it is, you know, they will invite you to do these poses that are extremely difficult if you haven't done them. And if you will relax into them over time, you will find space that you've never found, you didn't know was there. I mean, I can put my foot on the back of my back. I mean, who does that? But the analogy is, and as cheap as it may sound in our modern culture, I really do think that this mysterious God will invite us into himself through suffering. It's part of my story, at least. I'll try to keep that in the first person. And he continues, I'm gaining more strength of the fact I've lost my marriage, and all of that wonderful life in Wyoming's gone, and I will never have a normal relationship with my daughter. You know, I'm getting used to that, but God continues to amp up in other areas of my life. And I believe it, the way for me to live is to abandon myself to the confusion, the suffering, the unknown. And those are easy words to say, but if you can grasp that, that's literally the process I'm in on a daily basis.
Boy, it's just all remarkable. And you know what hits me, Jason, is I'm hearing this just this morning. You know, as I typically do pretty much every day, I was reading Oswald Chambers' My Utmost for His Highest. So obviously it was April 14th, that one. And he really writing about what you are so much talking about here. Let me just quote one thing. He said, darkness comes by the sovereignty of God. And what he was talking about is, so often we live in this immature state as a follower of Jesus. We just live by God's, you know, blessings and his feelings and this kind of thing. And he said, God will bring darkness. He'll bring a place where there are none of those around you for a reason. So let me finish the quote. He says, darkness comes by the sovereignty of God. Are we prepared to let God do as he likes with us, prepared to be separated from conscious blessing? Until Jesus Christ is Lord, we have all ends of our own to serve. Our faith is real, but it's not permanent yet. God is never in a hurry. If we wait, we shall see that God is pointing out that we have not been interested in himself, but only in his blessings. The sense of God's blessing is elemental. Anyway, it really is amazing that that entire section for today seems to be so much of what you're talking about. I mean, your story has played out, I think, what Chambers was trying to say in this. It's remarkable.
Those words do resonate. Yeah, I think that's the funny thing is entering into it. You know, it's fun. It's fun to do this kind of stuff, right? It's wonderful to get together. It's it's fun to have our coffee in the morning and have our quiet time and have God speak to us. Those are wonderful, warm, beautiful things that we experience. The difference is when God takes you into that and the pain is real, right? I mean, that's the difference is,
right.
You know, oh my word, this is more than I expected, which leads me to believe what I expect of what is to come is more also. You know, the whole thing that no eye has seen, no ears heard, no one has imagined what God has prepared. I think there's a connection. As I suffer, it makes that hope become bigger. Because if God is not afraid of us suffering on this earth, then my word, what what is to come? I mean, we cannot imagine what is to come. If he is not afraid of what's going on in Syria, if he is allowing that to go on with his loved ones in Syria, what is juxtaposed to that? I mean, how much glory, how much freedom, wholeness, fullness, life? If you look at the depth of suffering and flip that over, I mean, that's what's coming to us. That's my great hope, is that the promise is bigger than I ever believed. And I'm not sure I could ever start to get in touch with it on this earth unless God stripped me. And so I do think this stripping process is a drawing in, is what it is. And I'm almost scared to say that because, you know, you think, holy cow, it's going to go deeper. It's going to go further.
And I, you know, guys, I worry and fret. I want my stuff. I want to hang on to my stuff, whatever little stuff I think I got. And, you know, that just preoccupies my time. You know, I live distracted. And yeah, I grew up with this idea in church that, you know, you come to God with empty hands. And again, I'm like, you kind of get that, but you don't get it. But I was there, you know, Jason, I'm remembering the day where you sold every single thing you had, pennies on a dollar. And you said, by the end of this day, whatever is not sold goes in that big dumpster. And so, you know, what's amazing is a man literally goes, I have nothing now. All I can fit is in a, you know, a 3x3 space in the back of an old Subaru, the back seat of a Subaru. That's all you had. And that's then when God shows up, like, no, really, you have nothing. And now you'll have me. And it's like a living sermon, you know, for me. I don't know if we have time for this, Gary, but can you just fast forward, Jason, to, you know, you've always loved running. You're a stinking stud with running, actually. He's the guy that does the steamboat run, you know, up over the pass and you know, that kind of running distance, ultra running, whatever. And he has this love. He's got this job now, or he's placing immigrants on farms, and he gets to travel. And a week ago, you say, hey, I'm in Mexico, and I've had it a couple of days. Take it from there. Where were you going when you checked in last?
Oh, man, this is so fun. I've got, next time you guys have a gathering, I'm coming to it, okay? I got to come. I just want to talk to you guys. So Mexico, yeah, I was there for work. I was interviewing veterinarians in this town in Mexico to come work on these large farms in the Midwest. As you guys probably know, maybe don't know, that I mean, industrial ag is massive, and we really depend on Mexico for labor. So as part of my job is to recruit these guys. So I had to go to this town called Los Mochis in Mexico and interview these guys. So I don't know if any of you have ever read the book called Born to Run. It was a kind of a fad, I don't know, 8-10 years ago. It was part of this, the start of the barefoot running craze of minimalist running. We're not made to run with these big shoes. Wonderful story. If you haven't read it, get the book called Born to Run. Even if you're not into running, it's just a fun story. It's written really well. It's focused on these Indians that live in the Barrancas de Cobre, is the copper canyons of Mexico. And when the Spanish came and did their, you know, their conquest of Mexico, this was a group of people that was able to stay separated. And so they are now, as most of the world is becoming integrated, they are still largely separated from Mexican culture, you know, which is a mix of the natives and the Spanish culture. So these guys will run 100 miles at a shot. It's just in their blood. And they seem to have it in their genetics where they can run forever and ever. The beauty of the story where it comes into me is I just looked on the map and I thought, is that town close to where I have to go work? And sure enough, relatively it was. It was like 12 hours away, but that's close enough. And so I worked for a few days, and then I got on a train, typical kind of developing world travel. I rode this train for, I don't know, 3 or 4 hours. And I got off at this stop where I had read, you can get off here and maybe you can get a bus down into the canyon. And sure enough, it was classic developing world travel. You get off the train, someone says, well, we're going here. Oh, no, we're going here. Oh, that bus doesn't go there. Oh, you can't go there today because it's not Wednesday. You know, it's the third Wednesday of the month that the bus goes down there, all that kind of stuff. Finally, I found someone that was going the direction I wanted to go, and I got on this bus. This is rural Mexico, literally on a school bus that they had gotten from the United States, going on this dirt road down into this canyon. It's like our Grand Canyon. It's a massive, immense formation in Mexico. We're on this bus going down into this canyon, about a two-hour ride on this dirt road, and we stop, and at one point these guys get on that are they just don't look like the rest of the people on the bus. Most of the people on the bus were indigenous people. They're Indians. By the way, Indian and Mexicans, those are not derogatory terms. they didn't look like the rest of them. We just started talking. I forget why. Turns out they were Olympic recruiters for Mexican Olympic team. And they were going down into the canyon to try and find some kids that maybe would be potential runners for the Mexican Olympic team, because it's in their blood. These guys are crazy good runners. So I get to talking with them. We got 2 hours on this bus, and find all this out. And I said, you know, I've read this book. I'm just going to this town because I want to see where all these guys, what it's like here. I just want to see. I want to run. I'd like to go out in the mountains and run. And they said, we can connect you with one of the runners in town, one of the best runners in town. And they said, why don't you come to our meeting tonight also? We're going to have a meeting at this school, and we're going to talk to these kids about the opportunities, basically to change your life. If you're a good runner, we'll give you free college and all the rest. So the context of this, guys, is I'm just going to Mexico for my work. And then all of a sudden, I find myself in this story of immense meaning to me because of how much running means to me. It's this very soulful thing. It's just part of me. Climbing and running are just part of who I am. And people know that, but nobody knows that to the depth that God does. You know, nobody knows that. And no one could orchestrate this trip into this canyon and then put me in contact with Olympic recruiters who invited me to actually even encourage these young kids to take their studies seriously and maybe you could become an Olympic runner. And then to be connected with the best runner of these people in this town. And then he took me out on a run in the mountains himself. And then you've really got to read the book for this to have context. I really feel at a loss here to make this land well. But if you read this, if you read the book and go back and hear this podcast, it may have some depth to it. But there was a man named Micah True. He's from Boulder, Colorado, kind of a free spirit, didn't quite fit in the culture that we have in the United States. But he spent a lot of his life down in these canyons, and he had a heart for these Indians, so he started this ultra race down there. And they call him the Caballo Blanco. He has since died, but he started this ultra race. It's a 50-mile race. to bring attention to these tribes, this poor tribe down in these canyons. In the ultra running world, and anyone that loves running, this is a famous place. I got to run on the trails of that ultra race, and next year I want to go back and do it. But I was invited to run with the best runner in that town on the trail of this ultra race. And then the guy said, hey, by the way, I'm going to give you a t-shirt from this ultra. This is a famous race all around the world, and if you're into running. He gave me a t-shirt from the race. And then we were talking, I think the next day, he said, Jason, this necklace, Caballo Blanco gave me this necklace. I'm going to give it to you. And this doesn't land well enough without context, but the intimacy of God to take me into these canyons of this story of so much importance to me. I mean, it's like a tender, tender thing.
Mm-hmm.
I hesitate to even express it because another man can't quite feel the depth of something that's so personal to a man, right? So, but God knows and God knew, and he orchestrated the whole story, the personal intimacy of how he came to me through. I mean, even giving me a t-shirt that says, Caballo Blanco Ultra, Barrancas de Cobre in Mexico. It's utterly personal. And guys, if you want to go to a level also that might scare some people, I'm happy to go there too. I've got another story that maybe I'll share. Of course, Gary, you could edit this. And you're in charge. I've talked a lot there. Do you want me to share any more? Where are we at?
You know what, Jason? Why don't you share this last story? Because we're sitting at we've gone about an hour now, and I've seen a few guys drop off probably because they have dinner, or they're getting back from work or something. So go ahead and share the story. Yep, go ahead. Then we'll wrap it up.
You're gonna edit me. Here's the.
I'm not gonna edit you.
No, you haven't
heard the story yet.
We are such editors.
I really need to get to know you guys better. I love you, and I feel like I don't know you. But here's a crazy story, guys. I have been to such a stripped level. I just share this with you as friends. It's so stripped that what comes out of my heart has become my prayer life. I'm not monitoring my prayer. I'm letting it come. And one day, probably a couple weeks ago, what came out of my heart was, I just said, God, would you give me a sexual relationship? I just miss the warmth of someone's body, someone's belly on my belly. I just miss that. That was the prayer. It just came out of my heart. It was unorchestrated. I just asked for a sexual relationship. You know, and let's put all theological context aside. I'm talking about the heart here. And that's what came out. And, you know, I didn't edit that. I just let it flow. This is what came out. And when I was in Mexico, there was a gal that was hanging around us, and she came to that meeting with the Olympic people, whatnot. That night, she said to me, Jason, I would like to sleep with you. She said that to me. I was startled. I didn't expect that. I said, okay, and I went back to my hotel. And I laid in bed that night, and I thought, my word, how playful, how mysterious, how dangerous would be an accurate word, how just audacious this Trinity is, that he would do that. And, you know, ultimately I decided, no, it's not a wise thing to go do. I'm not going to sleep with her. I didn't, you know, I wrestled with it. I thought, wow, that would be fun. I went to bed that night. I didn't go to her house. But, you know, God presented that in a playful way. That God, the holy living Jesus Christ presented that in my life. Can you imagine that? What context do we have for that in modern day Christianity? Yet that is the God. That is who we are. I want to use the word playing with. I mean, that he is playful with us to a level of being dangerous. He offered me a sexual relationship, and he knew I had the fortitude to walk away from it because it wouldn't be a healthy thing to do. He did that. He orchestrated that. Can you imagine what that does to a man in my ability to trust him, to embrace him as a friend, to abandon myself to him? I just don't hear that in church, you know, and so I do feel like I'm on a journey with a few, you know, a few touch points, like David Geyer is one of them, and I would hope you guys would develop into that over time too, but that's just another story. I've got 100 of those.
Well, I'll tell you what, Jason, after hearing you in what has felt like a very brief hour, I can see why David said, you guys have to hear these stories about this miraculous way that God keeps coming to Jason through the trials, through the hardships, through the losses. And this has been remarkable. So let me ask Sam, David, any final words you want to give before we end this call, and we may do this again. But for now, any final words? Sam, let me start with you.
This is Sam. I think the thing that has struck me the most is Jason's continued use of abandonment. Is that the right word, David or Jason? Sort of abandoned to God.
Yeah.
And I think that I'm going to wrestle with that. I know that God, you know, we say on one hand when we become believers, we give our life to God, but we never give our life to God, you know? And yet I feel like you are learning something that I want more of, to be abandoned, to abandon myself to God completely, you know, give up everything. And I'm really inspired and I want to wrestle with it. So I really thank you. That's something I want to talk to you about more.
I would love to. Yeah, I appreciate you listening. As you guys know, it feels vulnerable after you share it. But yeah, appreciate you listening.
Oh, it's been great. David?
Well, yeah, I mean, we talk a lot about freedom, and that's awesome. But, you know, I experience it. I just feel like, listen to Jason, and he just had nothing to offer God. And then he gave him everything. I mean, you know, his most intimate desires and thoughts, and God's like, great, let's go there. Like, there's just this kind of freedom that is just really free. I'll end with a brief quote of a book I read years ago, and it said this: madness does not come by breaking out, but by giving in. By settling down in some dirty little self-repeating circle of ideas. By being tamed. And Jason has, he just breaks out, and I'm jealous. In a really good way. Just, he's breaking out. And, I just wanted, that's it. I wanted to share kind of the energy and meaning of the stories that we've been living. So, guys, thanks so much for just letting us drop in here completely
unrehearsed and going at it. So,
I like it this way. This is great.
Yeah. And so let me just say, this is, as Sam and David have said, this is, Jason, hearing your stories, just your honest life experience of both, you know, tragedy, things that you wished you hadn't lost, and yet things that you've gained because of it, finding God in these amazing ways, has moved me. It's the same thing that I just want to sit in this for a while and kind of chase God in this way. So thank you for doing this. Thank you. This has been remarkable. And I'd like to have you and David back on again here to tell us some more stories, because this has been remarkable. So thank you for doing this.
Yeah, it's really a gift to me to be able to do it, to be with you guys. Thanks.
Yeah. So, David, Jason, thank you for joining us and doing this. David, thank you for initiating this. It was a great idea. It's played out to be a really great idea, so thank you. And everyone, thank you for joining us. It's so good to have you guys back again, to be together again like this. And we will see you next week. So good night, everyone.
Good night, guys.
Take care.